with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, as always, I am absolutely delighted to be here with you. I know you have a lot of places you could choose to be right now. You have a lot of shows you can choose to listen to at this moment, but you are choosing to spend the next couple of hours with me. And so we want to make it worth your time. We take your commitment to this show very seriously. So we welcome you, all of our new listeners, as well as family coming back to join us. This has been an incredible weekend, a weekend where the city has really made a decision to stand in the gap for our children. Spearheaded by students from Frederick Douglass High School and Councilman Zeke Cohen, history was made this weekend when it comes to dealing with trauma in this city. I want to talk about what they call adverse childhood experiences. I want to talk about trauma that comes from living in a city like Baltimore. I want to talk about this whole new thing called hood trauma, where they're trying to make an argument that there's a special type of trauma that we deal with when we live in a city that has a lot of violence. So I want to unpack that in the first hour. In the second hour, I want to talk about the Baltimore ceasefire. It happened this weekend. We are always interested to see the impact of the ceasefire and the amount of work that goes into planning it and the love that Erica Bridgeford and her team, what they pour into this city, as well as the work that others are doing. I think about, you know, the no-shoot zone and the work that they do. I think about Umar's boxing ring and the work that they do. That there are people who are actively standing in the gap trying to heal the brokenness of our city. Baltimore City is a place that is dealing with an incredible amount of pain, that's dealing with an incredible amount of brokenness. Baltimore City is in need of a revival. Now, for those of you who grew up in the church, like I did, you know that a revival is when they shut things down, right? A revival is when you come out of the church building and you have your services in a tent set up on the grounds of the church. And they crank the music up and they bring in guest pastors. I mean, revivals started for me growing up would start when the sun's starting to go down and we would have revival service all night long just about. But it was a way of bringing the community and the church together because we are not supposed to be locked up in some church somewhere. We're not supposed to be locked up in some building somewhere. We are not supposed to be fixated on writing papers about the problems impacting Baltimore City. We are supposed to be in the streets. We are supposed to be rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. We are supposed to be pouring love into the places where we are needed. So I want to talk about that in the second hour. I also have some Chaopolis plan, some light things. I think when we ended this weekend, on Friday, I was just down when the show was over. I mean, I was counting down to the last minute just because last week was hard. The goal is that this week that we spend together will be one filled with light and love. This week, we can do more laughing than crying. This week, we can have moments of incredible joy instead of moments of difficulty and hardship. This week, let it be one that we lean into this moment and we make a pledge to try to bring a little light to the situation. So with that in mind, I'm going to do something that we rarely do. I want to start the show with a Chaopoly. And so by doing that, hopefully I can change the mood only because I got a heavy topic I want to talk about. So maybe some Chaopoly will get us going and get us feeling good at the top of the show to kind of pull you in a little bit. I chose a Chaopoly because it is Black History Month, folks. It is February 10th, and we are moving along with the 29 days of Black History Month, and for us, 27 days of Black love and Black joy and Black hope and Black friendship and Black family. Like, we are lifting it up. This is a chaopoly of black theme songs from some of our favorite television shows. So, Justina has told me, that's my award-winning producer. I'm going to put her, throw her underneath the bus. She said, in order to win, you've got to choose one of the theme songs, one of the three that we're going to play, and you've got to sing the next stanza of the song. You don't have to give me who's singing it, but you got to be able to name the show and sing one of the stanzas. And we got a prize for you today. We got some good stuff that we're putting on the table. You know what, Justina? Because we're asking them to sing, and we're asking them to sing the ending of one of the songs, I think today, I'm trying to look at Justina's face, I'm going to go ahead and I'm putting a real serious gift on the table. Can I do it? All right, I'm putting a real serious gift on the table. Today, if you get the Chaopoly, where you name the three shows and you sing one of the stanzas, I am giving away for Black History Month a signed copy of my book, Race Brave. Race Brave is a series of poetry all about the uprising. It is one of my favorite books in my collection, and I will sign it and get that to you. So why don't we go ahead and play Chaopoly, and let's start with that. Come on, Dre.
Making a way when you can.
Temporary layoffs.
Good times.
Easy credit ripples.
Good times.
Scratching and surviving.
Good times.
Hanging in a jar.
Good times. Ain't we lucky we got them?
Today, black theme songs. You got to name the show, and you have to be willing to pick one of the songs and sing the theme song for us. I'm doing something I rarely do, except, you know, doing pledge drive time. I'm putting my own book on the table today. If you get this one, because you have to sing one of the theme songs, then today I am giving up a copy of Race Brave, a signed copy of Race Brave, to add to your collection. 410-319-8888. That's 410-319-8888. While you're getting that together, let's talk about what happened yesterday. Yesterday, we as a city made history. And I'm excited and delighted that for once, in quite a long time, folks, the history we made was good history. The mayor, along with Councilman Zeke Cohen and students from Douglas High School, signed the Elijah Cummings Trauma Responsive Care Act, which is going to create a multi-agency task force that requires formal training on trauma-informed care and makes trauma-responsive and trauma-informed delivery of services a priority for the Office of Children and Family Success. So exactly what does that mean? It means that Baltimore City is finally becoming a trauma-informed city. It means that Baltimore City is finally recognizing that our young people, our children, are dealing with a specific type of trauma that comes along in living in a high-stress environment. What does that mean? It means that our babies who are dealing with the aftermath of 300-plus homicides per year who are dealing with their family members going to jail, who are dealing with living in food deserts, dealing with all types of garbage and pollution and litter in their environment. Our children who are going to schools that look like they should not even be open for business. This city is finally dealing with trauma-informed services. Our babies are dealing with a very specific type of trauma. And it's about time. I mean, I am so thankful to the young people from Douglas High School who pushed it. Now, yesterday, when they signed this bill, it was exactly 1 year and 1 day after we had that school shooting at Douglas High School. You remember that? We were talking back and forth about school shootings happening around the country, and we were wondering and hoping and praying if it would happen here, hoping that it would not happen. And here it is. It happened at Douglas High School 1 year and 1 day ago yesterday. The young people at Douglas said no more. They said they were done. They said they did not want to live like that anymore. They no longer wanted to normalize an abnormal type of existence. So they pushed Councilman Cohen, who then pushed the other members of the city council, who then pushed the mayor to end up where they got to yesterday. There is a such thing called toxic stress in childhood. And as America grows more diverse and as we're taking into account what it means to grow up in the inner city, we're starting to understand that toxic stress is real. Now, adverse childhood experiences, there are 9 parts of that. And I want to break this down. I'm going to open up the phones, get to my Chaopoly. But I want you to ask yourself, folks, if you have dealt with this, it's 9 of them. This is the adverse childhood experiences test. For every one of them, just give yourself a number. You use your fingers if you have to. If this is something you've dealt with, just put a finger up. Because the more fingers you have up, the more you're dealing with adverse childhood experiences and stress. Number 1, did you deal with physical abuse? Are you someone who, growing up, you were the victim of physical abuse? If you are a young person listening to me, and maybe you're in the car with this person who might be treating you this way, you may not be able to put your fingers up, but just put it in your mind. And then that way, when you go into school, you can let your teacher know or let your counselor know, hey, I was listening to Dr. K talk about ACEs, A-C-E, adverse childhood experiences. And I think I have some of them going through the test. So number 1, physical abuse is an adverse childhood experience. Even if you're like, oh, it's just a spanking. Oh, no, I just, you know, smack my kid up beside the head. Oh, he was acting up, so I had to pull off my belt. Or oh, you know what? Sometimes she gets out of control, so I just kind of grab my paddle. Physical abuse is an adverse childhood experience. Number 2, sexual abuse. We've often talked about good touch, bad touch. If you were impacted by sexual abuse, if that is a situation that you are in now and you are a child, you're dealing with what we call an adverse childhood experience. The stress that comes along with that. 3, emotional abuse. There's something about growing up in a household where you're called out of your name, where you're not told that you're loved. You are not told that you're special. You're not told that you can be anything more than what you are at that moment. You make an A and you're told an A is not good enough. You're always made to feel that you are less than. That's 3. I'm going to go through the rest of it, and then I have Dr. Sharon Hoover who's going to help us make sense of it. 4 is mental illness of a household member, someone who lives in the home with you, who's dealing with mental instability. 5, problematic drinking or alcoholism of a household member. Someone in your house who's dealing with problematic drinking or alcoholism. Illegal street or prescription drug use by a household member. Somebody in your house who's actively using or selling illegal street or prescription drugs. divorce or separation of a parent. Actually, folks, when that happens, when a household is moving around like that, that becomes an adverse childhood experience. Domestic violence toward a parent. If you are a child and you're seeing this, if you're in the home and you're dealing with this, it is something that impacts you. We're talking about adverse childhood experiences. And if you are an adult and you have dealt with this, you're looking and saying some of the things that I'm laying out, it's where you are now. What we're trying to do is find a way to get you some assistance. And then the last one is having an incarcerated household member, someone in your house, your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, who is incarcerated. That is an adverse childhood experience. I have on the line with me now Dr. Sharon Hoover. Dr. Hoover is a licensed psychologist who is co-director at the Center for School Mental Health at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dr. Hoover, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me and for talking about this important topic.
Yes. So what I just did, and I want to pull you into the conversation and pass it over to you. This is not my area of expertise. I just laid out kind of the nine, pieces of components of adverse childhood experiences. And I tell people, just as I'm listening, to kind of hold up a finger if these apply to you. If you're a child and you can't hold up your fingers because you're in the car with someone, to just, storm away. Are you dealing with these? So if someone went through this list with me, Dr. Hoover, and they're like, well, I have three or four of these. This is where I am now, where I was as a child. What should they do now?
It's a good question, and the good news is there is a lot more awareness now of the impact of adversity on children, not just in the short term, but also the potential for consequences later in life. In fact, when we look at kind of the number of adverse childhood experiences, one of the things we know is that the higher the number, the greater the likelihood for physical health conditions later in life, things like heart disease or stroke. That being said, what I would caution all of our listeners to, just to think about is that just exposure to adverse childhood experiences does not guarantee poor outcomes later on. So we know that young people and adults are remarkably resilient, and there are also things we can do systemically to buffer against some of the adversities that young people experience. It's a pretty rare case where we have young people who don't have any of these adversities. So if you are counting in your head and saying, well, I've got one or two or certainly more of these, again, it's not a prescription that things are all going to go downhill or that things are going to be guaranteed. The one thing we know, though, is that it does put you at greater risk of having poor health consequences and even poor mental health consequences later on.
So with that in mind, particularly because we know that Baltimore City is now going to be a trauma-informed city and that they're taking this into account, if you look and you say, okay, my child has dealt with this, maybe there has been some physical abuse in the home or some sex, maybe we do have an incarcerated family member or someone in our household has a mental instability, what should they do next? Is there a number they call, a place they should go, question they should ask their children? Like, what should they do?
Great. It's a great question. And so, again, want to remind everybody that adversity is not uncommon and that what we really need to take a look at is how are young people coping in their day-to-day lives? How are they doing in school? How are they doing in their community and at home with their family? And if we see kind of disruptions in their baseline, what we think of as kind of their normal or typical day-to-day functioning. Let's say their grades start going down or they're having difficulty sleeping at night or they have difficulty concentrating or difficulty kind of making friends or keeping friends or getting into more interpersonal difficulties. That's really kind of the red flag warning that we need to perhaps get some additional help. We know that lots of young people and adults will face adversities and do okay. In fact, most people who do face adversities do not go on, for example, to develop post-traumatic stress. But maybe 1 to 2 out of 10 will go on to develop post-traumatic stress, and it's important that we do recognize those signs early. And again, sometimes a change in behavior or change in functioning is a good sign for parents or educators to take notice.
Now, I'm glad you talked about in terms of, you know, that it's not always a sign that you're going to develop PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. But mm-hmm. we've been talking a lot on this show about CTSD, continual traumatic mm-hmm. stress disorder, because when I called it PTSD, my callers corrected me and said, no, mm-hmm. it's not over. I mean, this is mm-hmm. when I talk about violence in my neighborhood, I'm not talking about just something from last year. I'm talking about something that's potentially going to happen this weekend. And yeah. so in these high stress environments, what should people do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad you're having the conversation. And I would say that as a field, the conversation has evolved, right? So a lot of discussion around trauma, that there was a focus on single incident trauma or, you know, when young people are exposed to this trauma or that trauma. But there is a difference, and the research is catching up to understand the difference, really, of that chronic stress and trauma exposure over time. Decades ago, you know, they talked about young people living in urban environments really presenting with what looked like combat fatigue, right? So this idea that they are on constant overload of real dangers in their environment and what that does to brain architecture, to the development, to their ability to kind of function, as we talked about, in their day-to-day lives. So I'm so grateful to know that Baltimore City is taking this step to become a trauma-informed city. And part of what that means, as I'm sure you've talked about, is really increasing the awareness of all of the folks in the system. To really kind of take steps to be aware of the impact of trauma and to create systems that buffer against. But if you are a parent or an educator and you are seeing the signs of difficulty as they come about after chronic stress or violence exposure, it may be the time to seek help. And that can happen for young people either through their school, for example. Baltimore City has a long-standing expanded school mental health network where in about 110 of the city schools, we've got community mental health providers in the school system able to provide support right there in the school. We also have a large group of school psychologists and school social workers who may be able to work with families through, is this kind of typical development or do I need to be more concerned? Pediatricians and primary care offices are also a very important place for families to kind of work through some of those questions. And pediatricians are typically well-versed in kind of the signs of chronic traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress and may be able to talk with families. And oftentimes, primary care providers, pediatricians, and school folks feel more comfortable and maybe less stigmatizing to seek help in that setting than it might be to go to a specialty community mental health center, although those are certainly also available in our community in Baltimore City.
So with that in mind, I know we don't have much time with you, but I just wanted to just maybe three or so tips from you, because I know that people are driving and listening and sometimes just like three things I can immediately do. Maybe my child doesn't have those signs. Maybe I don't know how to ask. I do know that my child is growing up in this city. I do know that my child is, you know, in some of the neighborhoods where we have some of the challenges, in schools where there are some of the challenges. What are three things that parents could do immediately with their child? Is it tell them you love them, tell them that you're there for them, check in with them, try to have that conversation, like just that, you know, where they can do it immediately while they're driving in the car with their child right now?
Yes. No, it's a great question because we often want to know, okay, you know, there are things we can do down the road, but what can I do today?
Right now in the car.
Yes, right now in the car. So first of all, I think one is recognizing, again, the remarkable resilience of your young children and of your, you know, of your own children. And also recognizing your role as probably one of the most protective factors in their life, in their trajectory. And so opening that dialogue with your child, asking about how are things going? Have things changed for you? What's it like to live, you know, in our neighborhood, to go to your school? Who are your close supports? We know that no matter the environment, one of the best predictors of positive outcomes, no matter the number of adversities one is exposed to, one of the best predictors is having positive adult allies. So whether that be a parent, a coach, a teacher. So one of the things parents can do is make sure their child is surrounded not only by their love, but by the support system within the school. So that's number one. And that can be the faith community. That can be the school community. Again, we find these sources of support all around us. And that is a tangible thing parents can do. A lot of parents do want more information. They want to read. They want to go on the internet. one of the best resources for this topic is the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. I'll say that again. It's the National Child Traumatic Stress Network.
Got it.
And they have a whole wealth of resources for parents about how do I know if there's a problem? What are the questions? They even have guides for parents where they can kind of walk through some questions for their children. And then the third thing I would say is, you know, stay tuned for any changes in behavior or functioning like we talked about. And if you do see those changes, talk with the child's pediatrician, someone in the school system, someone in your faith community that may understand the impact of chronic traumatic stress. And, you know, you have the power to do something about it to help your children. The great news is that even when young people are exposed to adversity, to trauma, there are supports we can put in place to really help them thrive.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Sharon Hoover. Folks, I appreciate you coming on, and I'm hopeful that the work that you gave people today are things they can start immediately. She's a licensed psychologist who is co-director of the Center for School Mental Health at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dr. Hoover, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so folks, hold it here. When we come back, it's Chaopoly time. Folks are lining up to sing for us. Beatrice, Chanel, Michelle, I see you holding. I'm coming to you right after the break. Stay with us. Wise Whitehead, folks, we are now going to play Chaopoly. Now, today's version of Chaopoly is a little bit different than the rest of them. Typically, for Chaopoly, I have you call, you tell me the name of the artist and the name of the song. Easy. You keep your black heart, you're doing it. Today, Justina has taken a little bit higher. Not only, see, this is how it gets real rough on you folks. Not only do you have to give me the name of the song, but then you got to sing one of the theme songs. And then there's a stop three. You're a contestant in the game, and then the judges choose a winner. So I believe I have three contestants, right, Justina? So we have Beatrice, contestant number one. We have Chanel, contestant number two, and we have Michelle, contestant number three. So I'll go to each contestant. They'll give me the name of the song. They'll choose their song, and they'll sing it. And then we'll put them on hold and go to the next person. And then the judges. We have a ton of judges who will make a decision about who will be the Chaopoly winner for today. Because today, you actually win a signed copy of my book, Race Brave. And I'm excited about giving it away. Beatrice, a new call from Edgewood, Maryland. Beatrice, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
So this is our new version of Chaopoly, our game show version of Chaopoly. So Beatrice, tell me how long you've been listening to the show.
I'm a new listener for about 3 weeks now.
3 weeks in. I'm telling you, Beatrice, it's easy to get addicted to the show.
Yes, it is. You have very good topics. Very good topics.
We are excited to have you. So first, can you tell me the name of the three theme songs?
Good Times, It's a Different World, and The Jeffersons.
Okay, and which one are you going to sing?
The Jeffersons.
All right, you have 20 seconds, Beatrice, and then Chanel, hold on, we'll be coming to you next. You ready, Beatrice? The timer is set for your 20-second sing-along. Let's go. Are you ready?
Yes.
You gotta go ahead and start.
Okay. Well, we're moving on up to the east side, to the deluxe apartment in the sky. We're moving on up to the east side. We finally got a piece of the pie.
All right, we'll hold you there, Beatrice. Come on, Chanel, from line three. How are you, Chanel?
Hi, I'm good.
So you're a new caller from Columbia. Welcome to the family, to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, how long have you been listening to the show?
I've been listening since September of 2019.
I know that's right. You're an old head listener.
Yeah, I'm an old head. I'm an old head.
So now, go ahead and give us the name of the theme song and then tell us which one you're choosing.
The theme song I'm going to sing today, ladies and gentlemen, is called Moving On Up. The song is by artist Jeanette Dubois. You like to hear it? Here it goes.
Go, girl.
Well, we're moving on up to the sky, to the deluxe apartment in the sky. I'm moving on up to the east side. We finally got a piece of the pie.
Uh-oh.
The fish don't burn in the kitchen.
No, they don't.
The beans don't burn in the grill.
Uh-huh. Come on, girl.
I got to get up that hill.
That hill.
Now we're up on the street. Getting out past that
door, girl.
As long as we living, you and me, baby. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. All right. Chanel. All right, Chanel, hold on 1 second. The judges are doing the tallying up, and I'm waiting for Judge Justina, who's very tough, by the way. I just want to make a note. She's the sweetest person you could ever meet, but she gets tough on the judges, and she will let me know who is going to win our deluxe prize. It's a tough competition, folks. I mean, it is rough, but I'm thinking we have a winner. I'm thinking we have a winner. Folks, I am excited to announce that Justina, because she is such a softie, let me just say, that we've decided to give out 2 prizes. We're actually going to give both of the people who played our version of Chaopoly a special version of prize. Let me talk to Chanel. Chanel, how are you?
Honey, let me turn this radio down.
Turn the radio down. Chanel, yes, I want to congratulate you. They decided to give out 2 prizes, so we're going to give you a signed copy of Race Brave.
Won't he do it?
Won't he do it? Won't he do it? Hold on 1 second. Justine's going to get your information, and then let me talk to Beatrice.
Hello.
Beatrice, first of all, welcome to the fam. And second, Justina has decided we're giving out 2 prizes today, so we're also giving you a signed copy of Race Brave.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I am just so happy to have you.
You're doing a good job, Dr. K.
Thank you so much. Hold on 1 second, Beatrice. Let's go ahead and get your information. Folks, that's our version of Chaopoly, a Chaopoly game show, mind you. So if you're willing to call on the show and sing, we got to give you a prize. So both of them will get a copy of Race Brave. I have Will on the phone from Pikesville. Will, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm blessed. Hope you are, too.
I am. Thank you for calling. Are you calling about the fact that we are now a trauma-informed city?
That's one of the things I want to speak about. I think it's a very good idea. You know, we're going to have to do more, of course, but I think that's a good beginning. Another thing I want to say is that I really would like to see if you could encourage maybe Biden as well as Sanders to come to your radio station, even just for half an hour, so they could speak and people could speak back to them.
Yeah, we're definitely looking into that. I appreciate you. But we're putting out a call for any of the presidential candidates, because definitely I want to hear from Biden, who seems to be holding on until South Carolina. He's already resolved himself that he's not going to do well in New Hampshire. So he's holding on that he'll get down South Carolina where the black folks are, and he could turn some things around.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's just a little bit annoying that you just assume that all black people have your back like that.
Well, I tell you right now, I'm really concerned about what things are looking like for the presidential election. I don't care if they have to go to Hollywood and find somebody. There's plenty of people around that I think could take on Trump. But the Democratic Party's had plenty of time, so I hope they go ahead and do what's necessary to win. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Folks, we're going to open it up. We want to talk about the fact that we are now a trauma-informed city. In the first half, I gave you kind of the breakdown. I want to add some other things to the table, and I'd like to hear from parents in particular. Anyone, of course, is free to call, but from parents, because what the research is showing is that here in Baltimore City, that there's a special and particular level of trauma that happens here. They call it toxic stress. Urban trauma includes the sudden death of loved ones. It includes being assaulted. It includes being exposed to the violent deaths of others. When they did a survey here among young people in Baltimore City, this survey found that 1 out of 6 Baltimore City children have encountered a dead body, with violence being a leading cause of death. That more of our children here in Baltimore City have encountered a dead body. They've seen it up close and personal, living in this city. I'm just trying to figure out, when it comes to levels of violence, as adults, what is our responsibility? So here's what happened, folks. Let me tell you what happened to me. I do this thing, as you know, where I go around and I visit laundromats around Baltimore City. And I call it chats from the laundromat. So I'll find the laundromat. This is, I mean, I'm telling you, you may see me at your laundromat, but I wash my clothes at home. So my family thinks I'm insane, by the way, but I'm just going to be honest with you. I'll wash my clothes at home. I'll dry everything but one load. I'll take one small load and I'll look on the map of Baltimore City and I'll just Google laundromat and I'll just pick an address. And I'll go there with my quarters to go and dry my clothes. And so while my clothes are dry, my board operator's making faces with me. While my clothes are dry, I'm walking around the laundromat looking for someone to talk to. So when I see someone, I'll go up and I say, hey, I'm Dr. K from Today with Dr. K. And I'm doing a study called Chats from the Laundromat. Would you have time to talk to me? Now, because they're drying their clothes or washing their clothes too, and because it's the laundromat, typically people talk to me. Sometimes they let me tape them. Most of the times I'm just taking handwritten notes. It's called Chats from the Laundromat. And I use this information in writing my column for the Afro, Conversations with Dr. K. So yesterday, I went through the whole thing. After I went down to the trauma-informed thing with Zeke Cohen and the people, I rushed home, changed my clothes. I quickly washed a load, threw it in a bag over my shoulder, typed in laundromat, and I went over to a laundromat. And this laundromat is over on Liberty Road. So I went over. I said, you know what? I need to find me a laundromat closer. Started driving around. So you know what? I got to find me one that's very close. I found one, folks, right down from Towson on this side of Baltimore City. I mean, I was a stone's throw away from Calvert Hall. Down the street, I was next to that chicken place everybody likes to go to. I was there by the Zeke's, by a crab place, by an M&T. I said, you know, here's a wonderful looking suds place. Pulled in, got out, dropped my clothes in. So now, when I went back out to my car, there was a woman there. She had maybe 3 or 4 kids, and they were all young kids. And there was a gentleman with her. I don't know who he was, but she's screaming and cursing at the children. I mean, she's using all kind of choice language. They're walking too slow. They're not being helpful. One of the little babies even had a book. She snatched the book out of her hand. I mean, the language she used was appalling. And so, folks, I felt that it was necessary for me to lean in. Right? I said, well, I'm not going to ask her about chats from the laundromat because she's not up to it, but I will lean in. I said, I'm just going to see how she's doing. Maybe she needs to talk. Maybe she needs a friend. Maybe the kids need to know. And so I just stepped in without any fear of bodily harm. And I just said, hey, ma'am, is everything okay? And she looked over me. I said, you know, I don't mean to be rude. I heard you talking to your young people. Do you need some help? What she said to me, folks, she took all her ire and her anger and her frustration, and she turned it on to me. I have not been spoken to in that way since I became an adult, let me just say. So she's cursing at me. The kids are all upset. I don't know why they got upset. The gentleman with her stepped toward me. And so, you know, I pull back. I said, you know, I was just trying to help. And she's like, nobody needed your. And she proceeded to use a lot of foul language. And I'm assuming she had to have been in her 20s. I mean, she was not a mature woman. She was a young sister. And so I went back in the laundromat to mind my business. But I sat there and said, okay, so we have four children who presumably are all hers, who are being cursed at and yelled at and screamed at and verbally abused by their mother. I am an adult and I'm witnessing this. If I don't step in, who will? What do we do in situations like that? Is it our responsibility to step in and say something? I leaned in. This did not turn out well for anyone because all it did was make her even angrier. And I moved back because the gentleman stepped to my face and said, asked me, did I need something? Did I want something? Did I want to have an issue here? Did I want a problem here? So I'm just wondering, we're living in a city that has a lot of trauma. We're living in a city where our children, one out of six of them, are exposed to a dead body due to violence. We're living in a city that's already had about 34 homicides this year. Please make a note out of 34 homicides. No homicides have happened within the white community or Asian American community, only in the black community thus far. We're only 40-something days into the year. We're at a place where our children feel so traumatized that they need a trauma-informed, responsive care act in order to meet their needs. If this was you, folks, 410-319-8888, and you came upon a mother, a sister, cursing at her children, snatching her children up, threatening physical harm against her children, do you say something? What is our responsibility to the children in this city? Are we supposed to lean in? Are we supposed to say something? Are we supposed to catch their eye? Are we supposed to do anything other than just mind our own business? I felt that that was doing them a disservice. Now, I understand, when I pulled back, I did my best to catch the eye of every child standing there. Now, in my heart, let me just be clear, in my heart, I'm thinking things like, I love you. I see you. I'm sorry this is happening to you. I wish I could save you. I wish I could do more. My hope was in catching their eye. Some of the things that I was feeling might have gotten across to them, because this is what our children are dealing with. And if we don't say anything, if we stand by while our children are being verbally abused, assaulted by language, aren't we also responsible and complicit? 410-319-8888. I have Darrell on the phone from Baltimore. Darrell, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That's good. I just wanted to make a comment.
Yes, please.
As sad as it sounds, I would probably have to just mind my business, and I tell my mother that all the time, because I feel like if they speaking like that to their kids or trying to hurt their kids, they're going to do the same thing to me. And not saying that I wouldn't, you know, step up for a child, but it's just a bad time that we're in right now. And, you know, I know it takes a village, but these parents are really out of control the way they be treating their kids in public. And it's a sad thing, but, you know, nothing good going to come out of it, I don't think, if someone speaks to someone that's real angry like that.
But what do you do? So, Darrell, so if that was you, what do you just walk on and mind your business?
I mean, I'm a look on with concern and see if she, like, noticed that I'm concerned for the child, but by no means do I want to say anything and make it escalate to where as though she want to hurt me and the children.
Mm. Okay.
You know, because, you know, that's dangerous. A lot of stuff can come behind that.
Yeah, thank you so much, Darrell. See, this is getting me here. Folks, we have Shay Shay on the line. Shay Shay's 9. She's one of my frequent callers. Shay Shay, how are you? Shay Shay, are you there?
Yes, I'm good.
I'm so glad you called. Let me ask you, Shay Shay, because I'm very concerned about what I saw yesterday. In a situation like that, do you think an adult who's there should say something?
Yes, because when the parents say stuff like that to the kid, it passed on to like their kid to different generations, and that'll just like make a whole world bad.
So if this were you, and I know it wasn't you, but if it were you and an adult stepped in, would that make you feel like at least somebody's witnessing what's going on?
Wait, could you say that again?
Yeah, so in this situation, when this happened with the children, even though the mom, well, I'm assuming the mom and whoever this gentleman was, even though they told me by cursing at me to back off, I just wanted the children to know that I saw them and that they weren't alone. Do you think that's important to do?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's hard out here, Shay Shay, and it's good to know that as children that you're not alone, that there are adults who are willing to step in and help if need be.
Yes, and also I also wanted to call about that is because about the thing that you're saying other than that about the kids and the kids get traumatized.
Yeah.
It also happens in school.
There's a lot of trauma happening in school?
Yeah. Like teachers being disrespectful to students.
Oh, my word. You know what, Shay Shay? I'm going to have you do this. Justina, Shay Shay, I'm going to have you talk offline to Justina because I would like to find out what school you attend because I want to know how I can help because if that is happening, there's a way that we can assist. So hold on, Shay Shay, offline to get the name of the school. Folks, we got to do something. If it's happening to you, do you lean in? We have Faye on the phone. Faye's a new caller from Baltimore. How are you, Faye?
How are you? I'm doing fine.
Good. I'm glad you called.
Yes, I called in reference to what you were talking about the children being mentally abused.
Yes.
And I was listening to the child, Shay Shay. She was talking. She made a good point when she said that it will be passed down to the next generation. I believe that that's what's going on. That's what the situation with those kids is that apparently the parent had that done to her. And so she may have been abused. And, you know, hurt people hurt people.
Right.
And so I think what she was doing was she's passing that down now to her children.
Oh, my word.
So as her children, they're going to become her and they're going to pass it down as well unless we speak on it and we say something or do something to make parents realize that you are really abusing and affecting the children or the child's life.
Right.
And the times that we're living in now, as the young man was saying, was that you really have to be careful how you approach people about certain things because we're living in times now where some people are like a ticking time bomb.
That's what
and
I
the
thought.
Least thing you say will have you have your head skint back. And so we really have to be careful in how we approach people in situations like that.
All right, Faye. I'm so sorry. I have to hold you there. Folks, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I think Faye's going to hold on. We have Yaya, we have Richard, we have Pam, we have Diane. We're coming right back. Let's talk about what is our responsibility to lean in these situations. Or do we have one? This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
And a good afternoon. All is well on the light rail link and the Metro subway link on the Camden line and the Penn line heading from Washington to Baltimore. All trains on schedule. One delay on the Camden south side. That's 8:53, about 10 minutes late, heading into the Washington area. For the MTA Transit team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.